Change is gonna come.
See that you actually are a leader.
I was with Nike for a very long time and built my career in retail.
You know, I think this podcast just got its first exclusive.
Being an entrepreneur is hard. The highs are really high and then the lows are really low.
That I'm actually really interested in hearing more about.
Can you talk to us a little bit about what it's like transitioning verticals?
Being open to opportunity.
I feel like, okay, like if not now, then when?
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for today's Motivated Podcast. We feature some thought leaders and industry experts where they discuss what they're working on, some of the strategies they've deployed during this time, and how they've shifted their mindset, but more importantly, how they're keeping themselves as well as the people around them motivated. My name is Dahlia Strum, and I teach marketing at the Fashion Institute of Technology, as well as run a company called Rethink Connect. And I am here with my wonderful co-host, Pablo Henderson. He's the VP of Marketing at Equinox Hotels.
Hi, Dahlia, and I'm thrilled to introduce Samantha Sapstein to the show today, who is head of Women on the Move at JP Morgan Chase.
Hi, Pablo.
Yeah, thrilled to have you on. And, you know, sometimes I run through someone's resume to add some context, and then I realize that I've revealed everything by giving their resume, and there's nothing else to know about them because we've spoken about them in terms of like this curriculum vitae approach. So I'm purposefully holding back so we can shed some layers today and find out a little bit more about you beyond your bachelor's degree from Brown and your MBA from Wharton.
Yes, there's more to tell besides those things. So thank you. I appreciate that. And really nice to see both of you.
Yeah, so nice to see you too. Do you want to fill us in a little bit on what Women on the Move is?
Yes, I would love that. So Women on the Move is a global program at JP Morgan Chase that's really designed to help women both inside and outside of the firm. And it really is to help fuel female ambition. And what I mean by that is, you know, we take a look at women's many advancements in the workforce and outside, and we know there's even more that we can help women achieve and do. And so our whole purpose is to really bring the resources and experts and conversation to bear to help women wherever we can. We have three specific areas, though, that we really focus on. One is helping women in business. And that includes helping small business owners, so female small business owners, launch and grow businesses. And it also includes all other business owners and leaders in other size businesses, so all the way up to very large public companies. We love to help women get on public boards, as well as keep their companies going and be as successful as possible in the workplace. Our second area of focus is helping women consumers, with a particular emphasis on their financial health. You know, we hear a lot that women don't have as much confidence when it comes to managing their finances. And we know that they often outsource that job to the partners and spouses in their lives. And we want to make sure that women are very well equipped to manage their finances throughout their lives so that they can save more for their futures and really invest their money where possible. And the third area of focus of ours is helping our female employees at the bank. You know, we want to be the best bank for women, and we want even more women to come to work for JP Morgan Chase and really rise to senior level positions. So we spend a lot of time talking to folks about what's possible, showing great examples of our female leadership, and really encouraging women throughout all aspects of their career to keep going.
You mentioned something that I thought was interesting, and it was this idea of fueling ambition. And much like motivation, you think of ambition as this thing that you either have or you don't, or that, you know, may come at one point and may go away at another point. But the fact that somebody else could potentially fuel it for you is fascinating to me. So how do you see fueling ambition in not only the terms of what you're doing specifically, but as a general rule of how other people can help fuel ambition in other people? Because I feel like there's maybe a secret to fueling motivation in that same space.
So we like to acknowledge that women are very ambitious, and they might be ambitious maybe for different reasons than men are, or for various reasons. Obviously, no woman is the same. But by fueling it, we like to think that we provide the skills and the tools for women to use their own innate ambition and go farther. So how can we help women go farther in their businesses, for example, by helping them grow those businesses? Or how can we help them go farther in their finances by teaching them how to save and invest more for the future? It's taking whatever that they're starting with and really giving them that network, that confidence to do more with what they already have and what they'd like to do. It's so interesting to see different aspects of ambition being measured. Lean In has done a lot of research on this, and it turns out that women are just as ambitious as men. They might have just different points in their career that they need to incorporate different aspects of their life into. But there's no lack of ambition when it comes to women in the workplace. And it's very interesting to see that certain segments of women, women of color especially, are incredibly ambitious. But very often we know don't feel like they have the right support, especially in the workplace, to get farther and to have the right, you know, sponsors and mentors. So we want to make sure that no matter who you are, your ambition is going to be well supported. I think that's what we're trying to do, is really help you go as far as you want to in whatever, you know, choice you have.
So the ambition's already there. You're just providing the resources for it to come to the forefront
and make things possible. Exactly.
And I think you also mentioned something about like leadership and getting people on the right boards and making sure that you're accelerating their careers. Do you feel like they are natural born leaders, or do you feel like there are ways to kind of infuse it, giving them leadership qualities to get them to the next level?
I think there's great examples of leaders who always seem to have that natural charisma and be able to create followership among people. But I do also think that can be taught. We spend a lot of time at the company with just fundamental skills of management, but then also of leadership. So how is it that you influence others around you, even those you might not manage? You know, how can you make sure you are creating a credible voice? How do you bring others around the table who might have different voices into the mix? And how do you create an inclusive culture, in other words? So I think leadership can definitely be taught. I think we all look around and we see examples of great leadership, and we often see examples of poor leadership. And sometimes those poor leadership examples, if we, you know, observe them personally, are also really helpful tools to see. You know, they really teach you a lot, probably as much as the bad leadership models. But I do think it's something that can certainly be taught and encouraged. And I think the important thing to keep in mind now is leadership does not come in one flavor. And we can't always look to leaders in the same way we might have in the past, meaning male or white only, which I think we have. So when we see different examples of what leadership looks like, we have to recognize that, yes, it does look different these days, and it comes in many different forms.
I couldn't agree more with this idea of learning from bad leaders, because I've had a couple really bad leaders that I have learned so much from, because it's kind of like parenting, right?
you learn what you don't want to do.
Yeah, you know, and I was like, I definitely do not want to be that guy. And I will do everything not to be like that. And so I think that's a valuable lesson. I think we put so many great leaders up on a pedestal, and then the idea is, well, follow that. And while you're looking towards or looking for that leadership, you're also missing out on what's right in front of you, which are, there are some great lessons to be learned in learning from the things that you see from people that they're doing that don't work or are uninspiring.
Right.
Yeah.
Also like the path, right? So like you choose a certain path. And something that I think about a lot is entrepreneurship versus intrapreneurship, right? I think that there are so many opportunities in companies, and if you're allowed to take those liberties, you could really build out more strategic approaches. You could really take ownership of specific things. And I think this is a question almost for both of you. What do you guys think about like focusing more on intrapreneurship as opposed to entrepreneurship? Do you think that there's a right path? Do you think that people could learn maybe more from working for a company first before launching their company?
I absolutely do. I mean, I think the big company value, the things that you really learn there are, you know, how to structure and think through problems, how to bring, you know, a rigor to everything that you're doing, how to be quantitative, but also qualitative and creative at the same time. And it certainly teaches you how to work through challenges, many of them bureaucratic in nature. Many times you have to get a lot of people on board to push forward your idea. But I think that convincing others and really getting them on your side is a very important skill no matter what. So the ability to sort of have those basic building blocks, if you will, problem solving and being able to develop an idea, but then also take it out to the world around you, absolutely is critical for anything else you might do in the future.
I think it's about, you know, regardless of the environment that you're in, whether you're at a nonprofit, at a corporation, harnessing the entrepreneurial spirit that you have and applying it within the system that you have at your disposal. And entrepreneurship, you know, people look, oh, you've been an entrepreneur in the past, and that says something about you. Well, I think that a lot of people have entrepreneurial tendencies, and they're stuck in environments that don't necessarily promote that. But you can be, I'd never heard that term before, entrepreneurial, in all sorts of creative ways. And it's nearly symbolic of your creativity. But on the flip side, one of the things that I find is that's really interesting is people, I spent 13 years in entrepreneurship before I went to work for one of the largest corporations, you know, one of the largest travel companies in the world. And the tolerance I had built up for bureaucracy as an entrepreneur, through, you know, having to go to town hall to get a permit or having to get something with a lawyer finally approved or, you know, whatever it is, built up my stamina for that. But on the flip side, when you work in a really large corporation, the amount of stamina and endurance you have to get a project across the finish line because of the buy-in, because of the stakeholders, is equally valuable for this, you know, dream that everyone has that when they come out into entrepreneur, you'll be your own boss. You won't have to deal with, you know, the minutiae or the mundane or administrative challenges, because they're there regardless of where you go.
Yeah, I think that's so true. You know, I think the other thing too, we like to tell people about their jobs is you don't have to do this narrow box of a job you were assigned to, right? Your job is not just a job description that was given to you when you got the role. You should make something of the job, particularly what you want to make of it. You know, very often people find their own next opportunities by expanding the job they're in, by doing something else adjacent to that job, by taking something on for their manager, for their boss, that is very critical to what they're already doing. Or they pitch the idea to their boss, which I have done several times. You know, when I wanted that next expansion, I've taken that to bosses before with a plan and said, here's what I would do for it, and was given the go ahead. So I want people to realize that you don't have to be stuck in a job. You know, very often you can make the job that you want and it will lead to other things.
So I think that actually makes me think of like another part of that conversation, because it sounds like you probably had some good bosses, probably you probably had some terrible bosses. What happens if you don't get the good go ahead and, or you execute on the project and you fail? You know what I mean? Like, how do you keep yourself motivated when you're continuously either being shot down or you know that you need to accomplish something and it's just not leveling out?
I think you have to start with the person or people you're working for. Do you generally feel supported by them? Are you getting feedback that's fair? It might be constructive, meaning maybe it feels a little critical, but is it helping you to become a better performer? Is it focused on objectives that can be measured in the end? I think if you are failing but feel supportive still, have a boss you can still bounce ideas off of, have somebody that will allow you to fail and not penalize you for failures. Do you feel comfortable with that person really having your back and supporting your career? In that case, I would say, well, look, maybe not all projects turn out, but if you do feel supported, keep going, right? Keep working for that person and pivot wherever you can, for sure. But if you're in a situation where you can't do anything right, you're not learning from your mistakes, or your boss is so critical that they won't give you the benefit of the doubt and help you get to the next place, then it would be time to look around and if you can, try to get out of that situation. Staying with a bad boss generally never gets better. So I would say the sooner you can extricate yourself, the happier you will be and probably more productive and see a better career path.
you know, building off your idea of rewriting the resume, not rewriting the resume, rewriting the job description, I think that too often when people are in situations, regardless of whether it's in their job or life or hobby or a volunteer organization, you know, where they are donating their time, they lose track of what am I trying to get from this specific experience? And redefining what that is so that you can truly extract the most of what you can get from that experience, which may not be the thing that you think is why you're there. Somebody might be in a situation and thinking that this is part of, you know, a natural stepping stone or path towards the next growth opportunity, and that it's going to lead to this and that, and then that's not happening, and so they may lose motivation. But in fact, they are learning so much from this one person in one regard, or they may be able to rewrite the job description a little bit and get skills that they may never have been able to get exposed to in another environment. And I think that that is a lesson that isn't taught very often when people are frustrated in the situations that they're in, because the idea is, well, how do I extract myself from the situation, not how do I find ways to extract something new and different from the situation? And
also, how do you find appreciation in that situation, right? You're spot on with everything you're saying, but I actually know that feeling. And when you're
Do you need appreciation? I've been in situations where I knew that I would be not valued, or that I would not be appreciated, but that was not what was going to define what I was going to get from that experience. I could thrive and get so much more if I was able to actually just put that to the side and say, this is not where I'm going to get value. This is not where I'm going to be seen as a rock star, but I will get these other things. So,
right. But I think you're saying two different things, and I agree with you on both of them. A, do you need the appreciation? And the answer is possibly no, right? But then how do you keep yourself innately motivated to further accomplish whatever the tasks are at hand if you don't actually feel valued? A friend of mine is struggling with this right now. She has a very high position and she doesn't feel valued at all. And it almost makes her want to do the bare minimum. And it's like a mindset shift too, because if you don't feel like the work is appreciated, you don't feel personally appreciated, how do you keep yourself personally motivated?
I don't know that that is, obviously it's very personal, you know, but if you're going to be ahead of the times, if you're going to be thinking outside of the box, if you're going to be speaking a language that other people don't understand, I can promise you, you're not going to be appreciated, because there were things that I was talking about, new platforms, embracing types of technology, changing the game, doing business differently, that these old guys in the boardroom were not going to get. So for me to be there like, oh, they're not appreciating me. Like, when was I going to wait 5 years from now when they finally understood what that technology was, you know?
By definition, like, you were onto something, right? I mean, it's very often when people don't see that value that you realize it hasn't been created yet. And there's a beautiful thing in there when you can create something that hasn't been consumed yet.
Yeah.
That people don't realize they need it. You know, I love hearing the stories of entrepreneurs that start out on a path and they think they have a product or an answer for something. They realize that is totally not it. But in the course of going down that path, they have that discovery that really pivots them to something totally different. And this happens obviously for entrepreneurs and single individuals. And it happens all the time in bigger companies that have certain ideas. They do the research. They realize that really wasn't the right idea. That moment of recognizing what the truth is for that, I think, is so rewarding. And that's what I find really inspiring. But the path is hard, because you've been pursuing something for a long time. You've been investing time, money, resources, energy, everything. Nobody likes to feel that failure. But when you can emerge in the other side saying, well, if I hadn't gone down this path, I would never have found that breakthrough. I find that really inspiring. And I love to see people go on that path and learn that journey. And see what they figured out.
So So there's this expression, fail fast, right? When I launched my first company back in 2009, that was the expression that everybody said, fail fast. Except it didn't make sense to me then, and I'm not even 100% sure that it makes sense to me now, because how do you know that you're failing? I mean, House Party became relevant a couple of years after it was launched. How do you know that you're failing and you're not just a little too early, that you should be doing something slightly different?
Well, I think it's failing at the moment. You know, there just weren't customers ready for that sort of product or experience at the time, but they were later. And I think sometimes you do have to build upon things and find there will be a market for it later. We just weren't there yet, or collectively it wasn't there yet, or it wasn't positioned the right way, or it wasn't promoted.
I mean, the fast concept to me that I do relate to, and I've been guilty of also, is sinking resources into something or investing in someone that is not going to ever pay dividends, and stretching that out beyond its expiration date. And so the idea of failing fast is, if understanding the limitations of what it is that you're doing, accepting those and moving on to whatever the next iteration will be. I think that level of, and the term failure is used for dramatic effect, but there is no such thing as the failure, because within that failure and the failing fast, you've learned and you've actually won. I'd rather be the one that fails fast than the one that fails slow, right? Over a long period of time of sinking more money, more time into something that was never going to come to fruition. And I do think that there are so many times where time and place were essential components, and we can never truly understand, you know, especially during these difficult times, right? When there's either a financial crash or a pandemic or a war or some other world event that's much bigger that defines circumstances in a drastic way. So I think it's interesting because you see people who've succeeded by no real stroke of genius, but pure circumstance. You know, we were talking about Zoom before this call started.
Right.
Had this not happened, would Zoom be where it's at? I don't know. You know, none of us know, because we can't see the future.
Yeah. I don't love failure, but there are some people that actually run towards failure, right? So help me make sense of that. What does that even mean? Why would somebody want to run towards failure?
Well, I'm not sure people run knowingly toward something that's not going to turn out well, but they're running toward risk, or they're willing to take risk, and they're willing to embrace uncertainty. And those things I can readily understand. You know, taking a chance on an idea, taking a chance on yourself pursuing that idea, or taking a chance on, let's say, investing in somebody else, all of those things I can absolutely get on board with. You know, that you have a good feeling about someone or an idea or a market or a business. You can do research on those. You can really get behind it. And the notion that there might be a payoff in the end, I think, makes that worthwhile. Probably nobody thinks that they're going to run into a wall, you know, run into a lost investment, run into a damaging relationship. So I'm not sure they'd be running into failure per se, but I think they're running into a better future, an unknown future. And then along the way, when things don't look right, you know, try to extract. But I do like to say, and I try to do this too, I try to run toward problems instead of away from them. You got to run toward that fire. Because if you don't, as we know, just things get totally worse and out of control. You can't bury a bad problem. Bad problems never get better. Just like hiring the wrong people never gets better. You really have to address these things right away. So I think, you know, rather than running toward failure, I would say running toward fire and running toward the problem so that you can try to solve it is your best bet.
It's interesting that when you were talking about the three different areas where your focus is, one of them is financial health. And you know, I'm in a company where we talk about physical and mental health a lot, but we know that the guests that are coming to stay with us are people who are financially healthy. So we kind of take that approach of understanding that if you're not financially healthy, it does impact these other aspects of your life. Do you take that holistic approach to financial health? And do you see right now a need for financial health education more than any other time because of the circumstances, the very unique circumstances that we're in.
100%. So I think just to start, your financial health is just really woven into your personal health. Certainly it has a physical manifestation, mental manifestation so many times when you're under financial stress. So we do talk about that a lot, both externally in terms of educating people and internally with our own employees. We bring wellness to the table all the time and bring real tools, stress reduction, other ways of being productive and managing kind of work and home. I think right now financial health is more critical than ever and is more critical than ever for women and people of color. And we see that because, you know, number one, women and people of color have been in jobs that have been very impacted negatively by this whole environment. They've lost jobs, they've lost income. Some of these jobs may not come back, or some of these jobs and businesses might be the last to come back. And their health, you know, they've been on the front lines, whether as healthcare workers or as critical workers in delivery chains and grocery stores and everything else, kind of keeping things rolling. So we're constantly thinking about these populations and what we can do to make sure that they do have the right tools and frankly, just stability moving forward. You know, we had seen before this time that women had less in investable assets. They have less in, you know, savings. They have more credit card debt burden relative to men. And it might not be surprising because we know women have an income gap and a wealth gap relative to men. So these things really add up and I think put that importance of financial health and education, make that, you know, so much more important. And now is the time we really got to double down on that.
I think we're going to see some really interesting things emerge after this. Similar to like 2009, new startups were launched, Airbnb, Lyft, etc., right? Like we saw some really interesting creative ways to look at things. But when you're looking at some of the people that are launching it, and let's say it's a passion, how do you know that there are actually entrepreneurs that can support that passion and turn it into a business?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the education and the support really has to come to play. I think a lot of people do start with something that they're very passionate about or they know very well, and they want to turn that into a business. They love the thing itself, right? They're a baker, they love sweets, they love creating things, but running a business is a different story, right? Making sure you have your space, your workers, your inventory, you're pricing things right, you're handling customer changes as we all ditch carbs, like that is a whole other question. So making sure people know how to translate a passion into a business, I think is a great opportunity. And you know, more people are going into entrepreneurship as a like proper study in college and business schools, but it's not often taught to people. And certainly, you know, again, as we were discussing, like no one really teaches the failure part. They might teach you how to put together a business plan, but that presumes success on the other end. So I think we have to teach people, how do you take what it is that you want to hopefully make money from and actually have the whole business infrastructure and operations in place to do it.
And there's a community component to all of that too, aside from going to one source for those resources, is surrounding yourself with the people that are going to support you through that failure and through those successes. And I guess that's probably what you're providing too, is some sense of community.
Yes, 100%. That networking is critical. You know, often it is critical not only to grow your business, you know, maybe it's a source of new revenue or new customers or referrals, but it's also people who can help you through things, help you through those trying times, give you better advice when things aren't going right, or just provide moral support. You know, you probably heard of a lot of folks talk about having a board of directors for themselves, certainly for their businesses, but even for themselves. We want to make sure that people have that sort of that board that can help steer them through these hard times, because being an entrepreneur can be very lonely and no one's doing it exactly like you did. So you sort of have to gather all these lessons from a lot of people out there and take what you can, you know, where it's relevant to you.
You said something really interesting. You said a board of directors, not only for their company, but for themselves. What does that look like? How do you ask somebody to become part of your personal board of directors? I like this concept.
You know, I think this is a combination of mentors, sponsors, maybe even prior bosses, just people in your life who've really helped you along the way. certainly helped you professionally, but probably gave you a boost personally too. And you got to keep these folks close. So I love to tell people, when you're building your network, stay in touch with that network, right? This is not a one and done deal. You have to really nurture relationships over time. And then those people can help you along the way, you know, in far different circumstances down the road. So whether it's, you know, 5 or 10 people or even fewer, you know, there are folks who have cared about you in the past that I think will always be there for you if you nurture those relationships. I think about the people who have been prior bosses or colleagues. I have sort of different, what I would call boards. You know, one is sort of a more professional board that I could take a real business work problem to. And I have that, what I look at as more personal boards. You know, people who might understand me on a more personal level. I might take a business problem to them, but they might console me or, you know, talk to me as a friend would in a bit of a different way. And I get great benefit out of it.
I'd seen people as I was trying to, you know, having left entrepreneurship and gone to work for a corporation, I'd seen people accelerating their growth because they had sponsors. And I realized that I wasn't hip to this idea of finding sponsors and that I needed to get better at cultivating those relationships, because those sponsors were ultimately the people that were lifting those other people up into opportunities. And I was thinking quite narrowly about within the organization until I started thinking about just having, being a pro athlete, you know, and what would that look like to have sponsors? Who are the people in my life that are sponsoring this endeavor? And I couldn't agree more. It's like, whether it's, you know, board of directors, sponsors, one of the things that you have to look for is this diversity of thought leadership and skill set within that. It can't all be within that same domain. So it's an interesting idea of like, how do you have multiple boards of directors, you know, that are maybe they don't even know each other to some extent, and they're in completely different spheres of your life, but they bring value in different ways.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes to, don't throw out relationships. I don't know how to say it any better. You got to keep cultivating them. People will be so important to you over the course of your career. You never know where they're going to go. You never know how your paths are going to cross again in the future. You know, to the best of your ability to keep up with people and to stay relevant to them, you know, offer them things, share information and things back with them, I think it is just will always pay off down the road.
What do you think the best way to maintain a relationship with your advisory board is? I mean, do you keep it formal and send them updates? Do you keep it informal, check in on them? What are your recommendations?
I do,
or even right, by the way, starting from the asking point to ask somebody to be on your board?
I do all of the above. It really depends on the person. There's some people I will talk more frequently to, and there's some folks I might reach out to on specific matters. And or just keep in touch with along the way, you know, check ins, have lunch, have a conversation at least on the phone, and then have a particular issue or problem, then you feel like you can just get back into it a lot quicker, right? You don't have to break the ice over again. So I think it just depends on the different kind of relationships that you have out there. Probably nothing's going to be necessarily the same.
And what do you think the value, I mean, I understand there's a ton of value of having somebody on your advisory board, but what do you think the value that being on an advisory board provides?
So being,
how can you provide more value?
Yeah, somebody else's, if not sponsor or mentor, just person they're talking to as part of their own personal board.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certainly the psychic value and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping somebody else. But there's always something that people can teach you. You know, there's this term reverse mentoring, that someone can teach you something even though maybe you are always the more senior person or experienced person. You know, I like to look at a lot of my younger colleagues and think they're teaching me a hell of a lot more on social media and digital marketing than I grew up learning, right? That's something I'm always asking them about, or technology. So I like to look for those reverse mentorings and say, well, if I can be helpful to somebody just in general career development, maybe they can teach me something about their specific area or function. So I really like that kind of two-way street.
How do you get somebody on board with saying, would you be on my company advisory board and or my personal advisory board?
I think you have to show value. It's almost like, how do you convert a boss ultimately to a mentor or a sponsor? I think it really starts with doing great work and showing that you're a capable person and that you're a good thinker and a good partner. And by doing that, people gain trust with you. They know you're, you know, there for them. You are going to be, when you can be counted on to deliver something and to deliver it well. You know, we all start with the premise you have to do a great job at the job you're doing. That's the baseline. But what makes somebody convert into a sponsor who wants to help you is that they know they can take a chance on you. They know you rise to the occasion. You run to that fire. You're their go-to person. And that's what people take along with them. Like when senior people get senior jobs and other jobs, they want to bring the team with them that they know is going to be a good team, that do the work fantastically, right? That they check their results, that they talk to others. You just want to count on that good team behind you. So I think the same holds true for personal relationships. You're going to value someone who's always seeing your needs as well.
Interesting. I agree.
All three of us are parents, and we've talked a lot about this idea of these two worlds, the corporate world and the entrepreneurial world, and the idea of taking risk and following your passion. In your role of mentoring and providing all of these resources, what types of pieces of advice do you give to the parent, not just the woman, in the context of navigating, you know, taking those bold steps, making that leap, when that's maybe not as easy when you've got other responsibilities?
Yeah, it definitely isn't easy. It can get harder with every additional child you have. And certainly if you throw in the mix a child with special needs or any difficulties whatsoever, that gets even more complicated. You know, I'd like to tell people, and certainly women, but I think this is true of men, especially of those who are primary caregivers at home, just to stay in as long as they possibly can. You know, to not assume you can't do another job, a bigger job, take on travel, juggle it all. Like, don't make those assumptions until you're actually in a situation. I would say you got to give things a try. You've got to ask for help. You know, before you're going to bow out and say, I'm done. Just give it a try and ask for help from those around you. I've had three children. I've gone back to work after each of my children were born, and you know, that gets harder for sure. And there were many times where I thought, okay, that's it, I'm done. You know, I can't do it a day more. I'm gonna fall down my face. But you find ways to adapt. So I've chosen different jobs when things have gotten harder. I've chosen to maybe not travel as much when I had to pull back a little bit. But I never wanted to pull back entirely because I love working and I was always afraid of getting back into the workforce if I bowed out completely. So I just want people to stay involved as long as they can, and especially women. But I also want to tell people, like, you have to drop this notion of perfection, that you're going to be, you know, first of all, perfect at either your job or at home, or perfect at any moment. I let balls drop all the time and I just get less fussed about it. You just have to, you know that you're doing your best and there's no such thing as this perfection. And if you're going to give it your all at a given moment at work or home, find that way to give your all, you know, the flip side when you can, and look at it as, at any moment in time, I'm just going to always do the best I can.
How do you shift your energy?
Go ahead.
No, I agree with you. I love that. But how do you shift your energy when you let that ball drop? And like, how do you reset your mind or reframe your headspace?
I feel like I have this really probably good coping mechanism of, I might get very frustrated, angry, annoyed, whatever in the moments, and I'm able to put it aside fairly quickly. Maybe it's an hour or two, but you know, fairly quickly, and saying, I just have to move on. Like, that's a mistake I made, or I didn't do this, or my kid got the wrong lunch or whatever it was, and we're all going to live. Nothing's going to change as a result of my screw up, right? So we just have to move on. I can dwell on it for as long as I want to, but nobody else actually cares but me. I have to put that aside. So to the best of your ability to kind of compartmentalize, show that perspective and show that grace to yourself that you just got to move forward in this, try to practice that. I think it is something you can develop a thicker skin to do. And maybe, you know, as every child came along and I just could do less, I realized that was just a trade-off that I had to make if I wanted to keep you know, a sane level and a happiness level. You just have to keep going forward.
I love this idea of the trade-off. There has to be a trade-off somewhere, right? But the message that really resonated with me was this idea of pulling back and not feeling defeatist about it, because I've always been a move forward, progression, climb, grow, you know, more. And I realized that that was not sustainable and that there were other areas of my life that were suffering. And so the idea of pulling back at first was really hard for me, but pulling back does not mean that ultimately you've slowed down in the long term, that you won't get to the same destination anyway. That was probably the, like, and it's quite recent, in the last 12 months, that I came to that realization that that was okay.
Yeah.
It's very similar to the idea of, you know, not feeling the need for the same level of control. But I think that so many career-minded people feel that they can't pull back because people will pass them by, or it's a throwing in the towel type approach. But pulling back isn't giving up. It's just pacing yourself to some extent. Would you agree with that?
100%. You said so many great things in there. You know, first of all, we got to remind yourself that you're designing your own career, and it's for you, and your own happiness and your own priorities are what matter, not everyone else's external view of success, which is very hard to do, right? So I am that person who always like to go up the corporate ladder, get to the next thing for sure. And I'm in a business where everybody's pretty much gunning for those things. I think many of us in large corporate environments are, because that's what we're trained to do, right? The ladder goes up. But now we talk about a lattice effect, that you can go sideways, that you can go diagonally, that you can maybe drop down to learn something and go back up. Like, there's not really one path upward anymore. There can't be. This world is too complicated and complex. You know, when I took my current job, I created this job. This job wasn't there beforehand. So nobody really knew what Women on the Move was. And I had come from a job that everybody knew what it was. I was running marketing for one of our business lines. And I had several people say to me, was that a promotion? You know, why are you taking that job? It was very uncertain to them. And they were kind of unclear, like, what did that mean for me? And it was a really simple answer for me. I loved being able to do what I'd be able to do full time. You know, to work on something like this as a full-time job, not on the side of my desk at night, not as my hobby, but as a full-time effort with a dedicated team, was such a unique opportunity. To me, it didn't matter if it was just sort of seen as up, down, sideways, or whatever it was, because I knew day to day I would really get that much enjoyment from it, which I have. So I think often you just have to follow the path you know is right for you and try to tune out some of that noise if you can. I don't know where it's going to go next, but I know that it's been very fulfilling and I can do a lot of good in the role that I have.
It's so interesting because while Pablo, your takeaway was pull back, my takeaway was forgive yourself. But I think that sometimes, myself actually very much included, we can be so hard on ourselves, right? And being able to let go for a minute instead of harping on it, that really resonated with me, right? So setting high standards for ourselves, and if we don't meet those exact standards, being able to forgive ourselves, hit the reset button and try to restart, that really resonated. And it's so interesting how I heard a completely side part of that.
Yeah, I think, and maybe one of the reasons that I was interpreting that message a little bit differently is that we'd come from the perspective of parenting. And the example that you used was, you know, a packed lunch, you know, that went to the wrong kid or something like that. And I've got an amazing partner in my life who provides all of that additional support. So my side of the equation is, you know, more revenue that I'm bringing in, more title, more bigger stakes, more travel, bigger projects, you know, that side of it. And I'm fortunate enough to have the luxury of somebody that's supporting me in the other sphere. And I don't feel guilty about, you know, a lunch that's not made or not, you know, because I do all of those things when I'm there, but I'm often not there, you know? So, and I don't let go, you know, to me, it's not acceptable to not have the presentation ready or to not have the, you know, so, you know, it's, I guess that's a different, you know, perspective, but it would be important for me to forgive myself in a more personal sphere, in a more familial, you know, space. I wanted to give you the opportunity. We've spoken about men and women so much, about adults, but I know you're equally passionate about young girls and kind of the future. And I thought it might be interesting to kind of pivot the conversation a little bit towards Girls Inc. And if you could maybe speak about that.
Sure, I'd love to. So we have a partnership with Girls Inc., where we're their national sponsor of their financial literacy program, which means that we help bring education on finances to girls at a variety of ages. So starting very young, 8 or 9 years old, all the way up through high school. And what Girls Inc. does, this is a national nonprofit, one of the largest. They have over 70 affiliates around the US and Canada. And what they do is in each local market, they will have affiliates do this programming with girls at their schools. And so depending on the age of the girls, they will modify things. You know, at a younger age, they might be teaching you just about the concept of money and saving, all the way up to, you know, what is a budget? Why should you learn these tools for saving and hopefully ultimately get ready to invest or think about careers? So we love this partnership because it gets to girls really early. It addresses a unique audience as well. 70% of the girls that they serve are girls of color. And so really the need in these communities for this education is large. And so we're able to, you know, certainly work with them on the financial piece. But what we love to do with our employees also is work with the girls to think about careers down the road. So we bring them into our offices or we go into their schools and we talk about the kinds of things that they might want to do over the course of a career. Certainly not only banking, but just showing them what a professional work life might be and inspiring girls to just think about that for themselves, I think is a huge part of the equation. You know, I'm always looking at the research on girls' developments and the notion that at really young ages, you know, by 10 years old, a lot of girls lose interest in STEM subjects and they're not encouraged to follow their, you know, interest in things like math and science by their own teachers, by their own communities. So I think we have to break that and we have to get at that super early. By the time a girl's in high school thinking about things she wants to do or college, she might've been steered away from these things. And that is just so detrimental to her development and to society as a whole. We'll never get girls in the pipeline for STEM jobs if we don't address this super early. So I think about that all the time. I make sure my daughter is on her math and loves math just as much as I would with my sons.
So let's say somebody wanted to get involved. What's the best way for them to explore the organization? How do they apply? Is there an application?
So certainly if anyone is interested in JPMorgan Chase, they should go online and look at our recruiting areas of our websites and see, depending on their skill set, their age, you know, where they're coming from, where to best plug in. We have a website for Women on the Move as well. And so you can find that off of jpmorganchase.com and also just get to know our program. I would say too, you know, if people are in companies that they love as well, you know, get to know the employee resource groups that you probably already have. You know, those groups either for women, people of color, whatever it is that you can also get more involved with. You know, the women who get involved with this on a volunteer basis at JP Morgan tell me all the time that this is one of the highlights of their careers. You know, the fact that they can network with other people, run events, hold events, bring in expertise, work with girls. That is a really important part of their jobs and it makes their experience that much better. So whether you join us or you're in another great company, you'll find those things that round out your experience and other people who want to work with you on these things.
What's the best way for people to connect with you?
LinkedIn. Find me on LinkedIn.
Perfect. This is great. We are airing some like motivational quotes on Alexa for our flash briefings. So if you could leave us with like one or more, things that are either keeping you motivated or how you're keeping other people motivated would be amazing.
I really want to encourage women out there, as I mentioned, to keep going. You know, as women, you are in charge of your destiny. We have more opportunities than ever available to us, but we still need your great drive and ambition and fuel. So keep going and know that by keeping going, you're helping others to keep going because you're motivating others to do their best as well. You know, in this time of unbelievable change and crisis, people should know that they're not alone, whether that's struggling with a business issue, a health issue, mental health issue, there are communities around you. Please get the support that you need in this time. You are not experiencing anything that others aren't, and you shouldn't be alone in having to go through this.
Of all the people that we've had on the show, no one else has really talked about this idea of not needing to go alone, you know, and that there's no reason to have to deal with this by yourself. You know, yeah. That's a powerful message.
Well, you know, and the other thing too, and I think about this all the time, there's a level of this crisis that we can observe. You know, we can observe loss of jobs, staying indoors, not going to school, not going to work. There's another side that's harder to observe right now, which is the mental health toll that this is all taking. And this might not come out for a very long time. I just want people to be really aware that either themselves, they might be going through things that they can't name yet, or others around them may be going through real disruption and anxiety. Be really generous with yourself in this time. You know, we are all going through a disruption none of us have ever experienced before. So if you're feeling anxiety and not knowing where to turn, know that that is totally normal right now. And there are places for you to go to, and there are people for you to turn to. I don't want people to live with, you know, lingering anxiety post this time and have it define who they are going forward.
I definitely personally very much appreciate that. And you mentioned that there are resources or places that you would recommend. Is there anything that you can think of off the top of your head?
I think there's a lot of organizations out there that are starting to do webinars online about these issues. First of all, in major companies, you probably have an HR department and employee assistance programs that can help. So I would say, please turn to those. For women out there who are looking for supportive business networking groups, the Female Quotient is one, putting programming online. That's a great resource. Luminary, Deriveter, these are female-focused co-working spaces, and they've pivoted entirely to virtual programming. They're talking about these concepts all the time. So find them. You know, I think LinkedIn is also doing a nice job tracking job-related information, but that also putting a lot of other information out there just related to different sectors and also more personal topics.
That's fantastic. And then what about you? How are you keeping yourself motivated?
I'm a big Peloton junkie right now. So between the Peloton treadmill and bike, I pretty much try to get moving every single day to a new class with instructors that keep me very motivated. And when I miss a day, I just try to double down the next. So that's my...
And the bike?
I do.
Oh, that's definitely junkie status.
There's no excuse not to exercise when you have those in your home. So I have no excuse.
It's actually very funny. Almost every guest that we've had on is an exercise junkie.
Yeah.
I think there's something maybe to that. Obviously, it's a big stress reliever, but I don't know. It's a habit forming. I just like it. And by the way, I don't consider myself, you know, a big time athlete or a runner. If I, you know, manage to get to 6 miles per hour, I am psyched. So I really try to go gently.
You might be after this. You never know.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Sam. Really appreciate it.
No problem, Dahlia. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to the Motivated Podcast and also stay tuned on LinkedIn and Instagram for some behind the scenes and extra updates.